And a very good afternoon, I'm Clem Ryan. Subbing in again on Kildare Focus. Quiver's away today. Owen is busy at the moment with some Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. That full interview coming to you on Monday morning. That's on Kildare today, so stay tuned for that. Should be very interesting indeed, looking at all the action going on in Studio 2. Quite energised, questioning and replying going on. Anyway, on the Focus programme, hope we find you well. This is the first for me, certainly, anyway. We're going to be talking about a new train station in West Dublin which needs multi-million pound refurb before opening. Why so? And indeed, what are the prospects for many stations around the country? Are we maximising their usage? With some people saying, you know, if we want to deal with the overflowing of cars, emissions, bringing down those, etc., etc., we need to invest in our rail and transport network to give people more access to urban centres. Also, that coming up in a moment with the Irish Rail's communication spokesperson, Barry Kenny. We'll be hearing from a 13-year-old actor and magician from Maynooth who has appeared on America's Got Talent. The CEO of Into Kildare, Áine Mangan, will join us to tell us about Pause for Peace on St. Bridget's Day, and indeed huge ceremonies, events planned for that day as well. Next Wednesday, the 1st of February. How quickly January is disappearing. Christmas just seems like eons ago. Also, of course, KFM first came to air on St. Bridget's Day back in 2004. We'll be celebrating our, 19th year on the air. And we'll wrap up with local historian Brian McCabe, as today marks 100 years of the burning of Palmerston House, which is situated just up the road from us here in Naas. Now, of course, a golf course, etc., etc., etc. Anyway, keep your messages coming. You can email us at studio@kfmradio.com. WhatsApp us on 0833 97 97 97. Call us on 045 898 999. And we've lots of great music as well on the way between now and three. So, heading off with that an unused train station in Dublin will need a €3.8 million refurbishment before it can become operational. Kishogue station in West Dublin cost €6.35 million to build but failed to open after nearby housing developments stalled during the recession. Maybe not the first thing that stalled in regards to that. He's, as I say, communications manager with Éireann Road Éireann, Barry Kenny. Good morning to you, Barry. Oh, good afternoon, Barry.
You're used to being up earlier, Clem.
I'm used to morning crack, yeah, so yes. This won't be the first time I'll say good morning. Barry, I suppose this wasn't untypical of what happened in terms of when the recession set in. So many developments around the country that were planned and then were stalled. But in this case, give us a little background to this station.
Yeah, this was developed when we undertook the Kildare Route Project works, which people will remember was when we extended the number of tracks from 2 to 4 between Park West and Hazelhatch. So basically we have 2 separate tracks there now for intercity services and 2 for commuter services. And we did a lot of works in terms of improving stations, things like Hazelhatch, then places like, you know, moving Clondalkin Station to Clondalkin Font Hill, the new Park West station as well. Kishogue was built as part of that project in the mid-noughties in the anticipation that there was going to be significant housing development around it. Now, between the start of the project and the completion of it, we had the economic crash, the recession, all house building basically ground to a halt. Now, it was the only station, I suppose, of this kind that we have on our network which was built and didn't open. I know Lewis had a similar situation with, I think, at least one stop on their network which was built and didn't open because of the same reason. But it has, I suppose, remained unopened since then. And to be fair, I suppose people see it as they pass on the train and have been wondering. But the housing development is now kicking in again, and thankfully we're getting going with the works, and we will have it open by the end of the year.
€3.8 million to build it, or rather €6.35 million it cost to build. How has it come to be that it now needs €3.8 million estimated for refurbishment?
I suppose it isn't simply a case of the original cost being about building a station. You know, it is, again, a four-track system, the platforms that were built as part of that as well. But obviously it has, you know, been unused in that time. Also, we have, I suppose, system requirements, accessibility requirements now, which are above and beyond the original requirements. And there's replacement and repairs. There's been wear and tear. There's been vandalism, other basically degradation over time. So really, as well, it has resulted in it being quite significant works that have to take place. And indeed, the experience we've had in other stations shows that there are, you know, probably some materials that have degraded there. And there are better materials to use in that commuter station environment. So we'll be, you know, there's lift replacement works, there's renewal and replacement of all the mechanical, electrical, fire, telecoms equipment, you know, replacement of flooring areas, damaged ramps and tactile tiling, there's paths and paving repairs, there's up-to-date signage and station furniture, you know, better security mm-hmm. fencing. So it is quite a job, but I mean, I suppose the ultimate thing is that we will now have, as housing begins to arrive directly at Kishogue Station, a fast and frequent commuter service that will bring people into Houston initially, and then obviously as well they'll bring them around on the Phoenix Park Tunnel services to Connolly, to Grand Canal dock stations too.
This station is based between Clondalkin, Fonthill and Adamstown stations, but of course it's, as you said, it's on the Dublin Kildare line, and I imagine this is not the only case, is it, or is it, of stations that were planned and because significant housing developments or population expectations didn't happen because of the recession. We've seen it with the hundreds and possibly thousands of ghost estates that were there at the time. It wasn't just railway stations. Are there other stations around the country that would be in this that were planned and are have been mothballed since?
No, not on our network. As I say, I know the Lewis at least had one stop on their network that was in a similar situation that didn't open upon being built. But it is the only one on our network. A lot of, I suppose, and if we remember that time and the type of housing development that there was at that time, you know, some of the other stations that we developed, like Adamstown, which was opened as part of those works, had, you know, quite a bit of housing, albeit not to the same extent as had been planned, and more has come since. Places like Hansfield on the M3 Parkway line had housing that actually had been developed. Also, the Navan Road Parkway. So, in a lot of other cases, I suppose, the housing had happened and the stations opened. The problem was with Kishogue, simply didn't start. It just didn't start. But, you know, there is things like the, you know, Clonburris developments, and there is things like other developments that are now moving. And so, you know, we will have that infrastructure there ahead of the housing and the population, which is what we want to do.
I don't know if you were watching Echo Eye on RT1 television last night, and there was an item with Dr. Claire Cambometto, who incidentally is from Athy originally, a former London Rose of Tralee. We had her on the Kildare Today programme at the time of a couple of years ago. Now, a psychologist, I think, down in Kerry. But she was interviewing a gentleman, I can't quite remember his name now, he was from the Chartered Association of Builders, and I think it was about a station, a train station in Oranmore, which is about 6 miles from Galway, thereabouts. And the core point of it was that we need to invest. There are many railway stations around the country that many people would say are possibly underused or underutilised, and that if significant investment were put into them by the government, it would be a significant contributing factor in regards to mitigating our emissions, reducing dependability on the cars, and, you know, get people on an efficient, a climate-friendly transport network.
Yeah, and like, transport and planning has to go hand in hand, and I think that's what they were saying there. It was like in the case of Oranmore, we are actually investing at a station. It's a single line and single platform at the moment, but we are going to be upgrading that station so as it's two tracks, two platforms, you can run more trains, and then the lands around it, which you'll have seen, because it's a kind of a park and ride station outside Oranmore, but the other lands around it can be developed for housing, so as you have people with their train station right on their doorstep. And that's it. It's not just about developing the train stations, it's about making sure we use the lands that are close to train stations, effectively, they're ideal for housing. And I suppose, you know, we've had successes in this area. If you look out the Maynooth line, and I remember when I lived in Maynooth, you know, there was a time when you were passing Ashtown Station, which is whatever, you know, 3 miles from Dublin city centre, and there was cattle beyond the platform. Now there's major housing development and apartment developments there, and that kind of high density development right at a train station means that people will travel more sustainably, because it's easy for them to travel more sustainably, and that's what we have to be about, is making it easy. And that's why with Kishoge we've got the housing coming up, and it's not just in the suburbs, we're doing this as well in the city centre. We're going to major redevelop the area around Houston Station, so it's a place where people live, where people work, where people go for leisure and retail. We're doing the same in Limerick as well. We're working with the Land Development Agency there to ensure that, you know, old freight yards that aren't used to the same extent anymore, working with neighbouring properties as well, that we've got housing, that we've got businesses, so that the areas around train stations are areas that people will travel to, will live in, will work in, and making it easier to make the choice to take public transport. So there's going to be a huge amount of that work happening over the coming years. We're also talking to the Land Development Agency about, for example, Inchicore Works, where obviously we've got very significant engineering work taking place, but we can consolidate that activity where it's essential engineering works in part of Inchicore, and free up land then for development right around, you know, a very busy area that's just outside Houston Station. So it's great to see that. I mean, if you look back to the 80s and 90s, unfortunately, planning and transport didn't happen hand in hand, and transport didn't get the investment that it needed at the time. But we are seeing it now, I think if Eco Eye and if you go back to areas like Owen Moore and other areas, and, you know, over the next 5 years, they will see the areas transformed, and the, you know, the stations will be busier, there'll be more trains, and there'll be people living and working there too.
It's a very interesting concept, I think, and it's easy to say so and be wise in retrospect, but I mean, I'd be of a generation that remembers when the station was on the fringe of everything, away from you, and then as people became more dependable, the church was handier, jump into the car and go, whatever. But also, the fact that many people, we need to develop the infrastructure around stations, not just the housing element, but that people can find parking at stations around the country. And I suppose that's difficult for yourselves, because many stations are at this stage, because of the way planning proceeded, there isn't much room for expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's a few ways of looking at that issue. There are certainly some locations where there isn't much more land to use or to be made available. But, you know, we've worked with, for example, at Salins, we've been able to expand the car park and use an area of adjoining property as underground car parking as well. Also, we need to make it easier for people to walk and cycle to stations as well. Gives people an alternative to have to drive to the car park and freeze more land. So there's going to be a lot of work again on that kind of, you know, multimodal transport. The new Dark Plus trains will be, you know, a lot, you know, more convenient for bikes as well. And just allowing that to happen. There are certain locations where we're going to have to go up in terms of, you know, multi-storey car parks on our sites and as well. But it is, I suppose, that balance is, one, are there options where there's more land where we can develop it? Two, do we make it easier to cycle and walk? But three, it's building closer to the station so that you can walk there. That basically, if people have the station on their doorstep, then the issue of having to drive and needing space for car parks just doesn't arise. So there are a lot of opportunities in that still.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting times, and I found the programme very interesting last night from that point of view, because wouldn't have struck me in the past of, you know, if you want to maximise the use of stations, mitigate the use of cars, well then we need to get people living close to those stations and utilising land that might be used from a development point of view. Meanwhile, Kishoge train station is expected to be up and running by the end of 2023, situated, as I said, between Clontarf and Fonthill and Adamstown, but on the Dublin Kildare line. So of interest to Kildare listeners as well. And communications spokesperson with the Irish Rail, Barry Kenny. Always very generous with your time, Barry, for us here on KFM. Thanks for joining us. All right, and good morning to you. That was Barry Kenny and the story of train stations. I can think of places around the country, like my own station at home in Athy, for example, And now where the major ring road is going to run the back of it, there won't be much room for housing on that end. But there's a lot of land, farming land, albeit, that's there that possibly could be developed down the line, pending, of course, the owners wanting to sell it. And I think of at home in Ennis Sinclair, yeah, well, a lot of residential stuff has gone around the station. But over the years, that station was downgraded. I mean, it used to run all the way to Galway. It still probably does, but the number of trains running it was reduced, everything else. And how many stations around the country have suffered that fate, where either the a number of trains were reduced, or in some cases, the railway lines were lifted. And what are you going to do with them again at this stage? We don't know. More to come.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Welcome back. It's Clem standing in for Caoimhe today, who's off enjoying herself in foreign fields, but she'll be back with you on Monday as usual between 2 and 3. Just to bring you up to date, by the way, that Dublin City Council says the total number of code black or illegally removed clams in 2022 was 3,521 people removed their clams. The figures indicate a six-fold increase, as the Irish Times, in the number of illegally removed clams in the city between 2021 and 22. Many of them in the vicinity of construction sites where heavy-duty tools would be available, the council noted. There were 531 code blacks in the first 11 months of 21, according to the previous council report. In October 21, the council reintroduced parking wardens to hand out fixed notice fines, in addition to continuing its clamping operations. Removal of parking clamp causing damage is an offence under the Criminal Damage Act. The council and private parking enforcement companies have warned that any such incidents are reported to An Garda Síochána. 8 of the top 10 streets in Dublin City where motorists were most likely to be clamped in 2022 were in the South City area. In all, just 2 of the top 10 sites where the clampers were busiest was north of the river. Read what you will from that anyway. The number one street for clamping was Clarendon Street in Dublin 2. It's a narrow street in the heart of the South City's premier shopping district. It runs parallel to Grafton Street. And in the 12 months, there were 771 clamps on that street. Next was the Mespil Road with 701. And that was followed by the city's South Circular Road, where 607 clamps were issued. And the story goes on and on and on. Clamping charges in Dublin, by the way, have increased to €125 from €80. That was in 2022. So it's a very expensive thing if you're clamped. It'll be even more expensive, by the way, if you remove it illegally, because you'll have further proceedings on top of that. Okay, let's move on anyway. I don't know what it's like to be a superstar, but certainly my next guest does. Aidan McCann is an actor and magician from Maynooth. Good morning, Aidan. That's the second time I said that. So accustomed to the morning programme. Good afternoon, Aidan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good, and obviously you're very well, because you're one of 60 contestants from around the world asked to appear in America's Got Talent, All Stars. Now, all contestants are previous winners, finalists or fan favourites from Got Talent shows across the globe. And this brand new series sees them compete against each other for the ultimate AGT All Stars title. Tell me more, will you? How did you get involved in this?
I've been practicing to describe it like that for a while. You did a very excellent summary there. It was super fun. It's been a while since I've done a Got Talent, because I did Britain's Got Talent about 2 years ago. So it was great to get back on a big stage back in LA doing the All Stars.
You're 13 now, but you first appeared on stage. When and where and what age were you?
So, yeah, I'm 13 now. I first appeared, but my mum does an acting school, so I go on stage every year for that. But for magic, I first went on stage on Ireland's Got Talent when I was 9. And then after that, the Ellen Show wanted me to go out, and I performed on a Vegas stage. So I'm the youngest magician to perform on a Vegas stage ever, which is pretty cool.
And the Ellen Show, for people who don't know, is that the Ellen DeGeneres Show?
Ellen DeGeneres Show, yeah.
Yeah, and that's in Los Angeles, of all places. My God, what an exotic route you've had, and that was only by the age of 9.
Yeah, I love going out to LA. It's really, really nice there. I've been out a few times. They do really nice chocolate milk.
Right. And what did you do on Ellen's show?
So I did magic on it, and I was talking about how Ireland's Got Talent was. And then I went on it again after that because I was in the middle of doing Britain's Got Talent. And when I went out the second time, I was I had my own show on it as well called Aidan's Magic Corner, where I interviewed celebrities like Colin Farrell and Emily Blunt and the Jonas Brothers.
I can't keep up with you at all. And you weren't finished there because one of my favourite actors is, could I call her a comedian, Melissa McCarthy?
Oh, I love Melissa McCarthy as well. So yeah, at the same time I was out doing the Ellen Show and Aidan's Magic Corner, they also wanted me to go on Little Big Shots. And meeting Melissa McCarthy was a dream come true. I'd always loved her, like in Ghostbusters and stuff like that. She's super, super funny, and she's really, really nice. I met her and her daughter after the show, but she's so nice.
And just tell me, before we go to more exotic places like the United Kingdom and that, how did you get the link to be recruited for these shows in Los Angeles and other places in the States?
Yeah, so first I was on Ireland's Got Talent, and then after that kind of, it's been like a dominoes roll. So then I was on the Ellen Show because they found me from Ireland's Got Talent, and then Britain's Got Talent from the Ellen Show, and America's Got Talent All Stars and Britain's Got Talent. So it's cool because a lot of people have been asking me.
Right, I'm just looking at some other things because I know you do charity shows, and you've done a couple of shows in Britain, including the BBC's well-known one, Blue Peter. Tell me about your interest in magic and how that came about.
Yeah. So I started magic when I was 5, and I loved it because I loved just seeing it performed, and I loved the wow factor of it. So I thought, you know, I'd like to give people that experience. So I started learning it. That was only like the magic sets, and I think every kid kind of goes through a phase where they buy loads of magic sets. And then at around 7, I started learning card tricks off YouTube, and that was when I started getting pretty good for a 7-year-old, because that was when card tricks are hard enough when you're that age anyways.
Okay, now, one of the biggest series on television at the moment here and stateside is Kevin Costner's series, which I've just had a mental blank on the name, even though Yellowstone, of course. And you're going to be involved filming with Kevin Costner, are you, this year?
Yeah, so I was over last August filming a movie with him. It's a Western movie. I think that's all I can say. And I'm out in April again shooting some more with him. He's really nice. And the first day we got there, actually, he was the producers and all were like, oh, do you want to go over to Kevin's house later? So that was funny. And I went over and showed him a few magic tricks, and he was helping me out with some of the scenes.
Okay. And you're also appearing in a new Irish drama as well.
Yeah, Clean Sweep. So I was filming that in July, and that'll be out on RTE hopefully soon enough. I think it's April, early April. I could be wrong, but I think it's sometime then anyways. But I'm really excited to see that. That was a really fun shoot.
You have accomplished more in your 13 years to date than most people do in 5 lifetimes. I have to say, the success is extraordinary. So what are your ambitions?
I'd like to be a magician and an actor when I grow up, kind of like Neil Patrick Harris, because a lot of people don't know, but he's actually the president of the Magic Castle in LA. So he's also big into magic and acting. So I think that would be pretty cool to kind of do both like that.
And where do you go to school, by the way?
I go to school here in Maynooth Post Primary, giving them a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah. Are they all aware of what a superstar they have in their midst?
Yeah, actually, a lot of them don't know that I did America's Got Talent All Stars recently. But the whole school knows who I am, though.
And isn't our friend Paul Mescal from your part of the country as well?
Yeah, Paul Mescal. He used to go to the same school I go to now, which is really cool. So the principal he's really kind of signing stuff and letting me go away for stuff like this.
That's fantastic and most unusual, as I said earlier in the programme, to have two superstars in the one Kildare town, because of course Paul Mescal is making enormous headlines, having been nominated for an Oscar. Very talented family. His sister is a very fine singer. He's also been described as brilliant in a new West End production in London. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot of big things about him in the future. And his mam was on KFM in the last 2 days as well, speaking with Owen and Caoimhe on Kildare Today and Kildare Focus. And a lot of big things ahead for you as well, I have to say, Aidan McCann.
Thank you, yeah. Also my sister, she does a bit of acting as well. She was just filming a movie with John Cena.
My God almighty, I'll tell you, I can't keep up with you. And tell me just a word before you go about your wonderful mum who has engendered all this great affection for show business in you.
Yeah, she's nice, yeah. It's good, though, because she's learnt, like, the magic with me along my journey, so she's good if I ever need to test out how foolproof a trick is. Like, because I like going to magic conventions, so, like, when I go to magic conventions, I want tricks that are fool magicians. So since she's been learning with me, she'd know how a lot of my tricks are done, so it's good to kind of practice on her. And she also does something called Brennan Performing Arts, where it's like a drama school where kids, you know, sing and dance and do drama stuff. And then at the end of the year, they have a show.
Well, I have to say, it's been wonderful talking to you. I'm certainly going to keep a lookout for you, Aidan McCann. All 13 years of you, you put us all to shame altogether. Yet another superstar emerging from Maynooth. And regards to you, to your mum, your family, your sister and everybody else. And best wishes for success in the future.
Thank you.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Welcome back. Clem standing in for Caoimhe today. Now, just some statistics just been released in the last hour or so. The number of homeless people in this country has reached a new high of 11,632, with the greatest increase among single adults. Those, the latest figures show that. Now, that's 11,632 homeless. I don't believe for a moment that takes the full account of people who might be sharing accommodation with friends, couch surfing, etc., etc. The data from the Department of Housing shows there's been a 30% increase in homelessness in a year. 30%. A third. This is also the first increase in homelessness in December since current records began in late 2014. Numbers usually fall slightly in December as families take homeless loved ones in over Christmas and landlords postpone evictions. And yet, on Kildare Today this morning with Owen Beattie, he was speaking with Kildare North TD James Lawless, who was under the impression that the government was reaching their housing figures. We're not even remotely near our housing figures. You know, even if we build 30,000 this year, it's not enough. There are 11,000 plus people who are homeless. 5,793 in Dublin. In the Mideast, I take it that'll take ourselves in, 441 adults. And families accessing accommodation, 1,148 families are looking in Dublin for emergency accommodation, as are 83 families in the Mideast, which includes Kildare. So quite significant altogether. During the week of 19th, 25th of December, that's Christmas week now, there were 8,190 adults, 3,442 children in emergency accommodation. What a way to spend your Christmas. What an indictment of the way this country has gone. And let's not be blaming it on people who have arrived here from other countries. We had a housing crisis and a crisis in homelessness long before Ukrainians and other people seeking refuge arrived in this country. Anyway, let's move on. You just heard it in the last couple of minutes by Bridget 1500. And I'm joined by CEO of Into Kildare, Áine Mangan. Good morning to you. Oh, Jesus. I've had three guests on today, Áine.
Look at you. It's still morning.
And every one of them I've opened up by saying good morning.
Good morning, Clem.
And that's after all, that's the years I've been on Kildare Today. And I keep saying it. Sorry about that. Anyway. Now, County Kildare calls for a pause for peace on St. Bridget's Day. Tell me more, Áine.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's an initiative by Sulla's Frida, and we've collaborated with them to help market and promote it out for a global Pause for Peace. And I suppose it's in honour of St. Bridget's Day coming up and the new public holiday. And St. Bridget was renowned as a peacemaker, as we know. And we're asking people around the world to stop for a minute silence at 12 noon in their local time on the 1st of February 2023 to pause and remember St. Bridget. And it's really, you know, sending a message out there opposing warfare. And I think it's very relevant in our current time.
And we have a new think public holiday to thank St. Bridget for, which will be on Monday week, I believe.
Yes, that's right. So we're the only county with our own public holiday. We had the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar down this morning promoting the Pause for Peace and a number of initiatives that we're doing for the year, really, with regard to St. Bridget as well. So it was great endorsement, and we're delighted to try and spread the word, and we'll be lighting up Kildare again, or shining a light on Kildare again this year, in lighting up the Hill of Allen and Cupid's Town. And we're very lucky to have our own local Kildare person, Celine Byrne, singing for us as well.
Oh, so yeah, what a singer she is. Well, I blame you then for keeping the Taoiseach late. He was due here to record an interview at 1:30. He didn't get here until about 1:45, but he will be, Owen has recorded an extensive interview with the Taoiseach, which will be aired on Monday morning's Kildare Today.
Now, yeah, it was great.
This, I think, is a great concept, particularly in the times that we're in with Russia invading Ukraine and so forth. And we have three Kildare ambassadors in this Pause for Peace Day. I see the names Ewan Morris, Lily Terrell Kenny, and Ben Ryan. If I'm not mistaken, that name rings a bell. Would Ben rhyme with Glenn? Would he be Glenn Ryan's son?
I think so, because as you probably know, we had an outside broadcast we organised in the Market Square in Kildare, and many of the students, the biggest human, Bridget's Cross, they did. So we're going to be releasing that footage out as well. But it was unbelievable. And yes, Glenn and all the team there helped organise that. Yeah. From the Kildare Town Community School.
Well, I'm absolutely sure it could be Ben Ryan, who also, by the way, is a chip off the old block in a big way, because he's also been named in the Kildare Minor football squad for this year. So it's just...
Well, they're great ambassadors for our county, so it's great to have them on board supporting it as well.
Absolutely. Now, what would you like people to do on February 1st, Wednesday next?
Well, it's spreading the word, really. We have a message from the Taoiseach, and obviously we'll be rolling that out at on the 31st, on the eve, when we're lighting up the hill. But on the day, it's really just to pause and take a moment. It's really to honour St. Bridget and the year ahead. As you know, 2024 marks the 1500th year of the passing of St. Bridget, and there's a lot of activities going on over the year with Bridget 1500, which I think a lot of people will have heard of by now. So there's a number of activities. There's bar procession in Kildare Town, but it's all over the county as well. It's not just Kildare Town. So have a look online there, intokildare.ie, and you'll find out what all the activities that are going on. And of course, Sulla's Frida has a great lineup for Fela Breed, which they do every year as well.
And as my mother would say, St. Bridget was renowned as a bit of a tough nail.
A tough nail, but a great woman. So, you know, I never thought I'd be coming back learning so much about St. Bridget's, because we had to take it as our confirmation name at the time. That tells you how old I am now. But I mean, I take all the bits I like, but it's, an amazing woman, and really is relevant to today's world. So, there's lots of information sessions as well, and the traditions around St. Bridget. But, you know, she's renowned, I suppose, as a peacemaker. Mm. One of the most popular stories is her giving away her father's precious jeweled sword. you know, to a poor person. So she always was helping.
And spreading her cloak around the Curragh, which gave rise to the Curragh Plain. It's a great story. And we'll be marking the day here because it was on St. Bridget's Day 2004 that KFM first came to air. So it's a special anniversary for us as well on that day. And we'll have the usual with St. Bridget's Crosses, the legend. And of course, we will be covering all the activities in regards to Bridget 1500 over the next year or so. That's at 12 noon on Wednesday next. Everybody to pause just for a moment, a minute's silence, to reflect and send out a strong message of peace and goodwill around the world. And Áine, briefly and finally, of course, wearing your main hat as CEO of Kildare's tourism organisation Into Kildare, this can only be good for the profile of Kildare as well.
Absolutely, and I suppose that's what we're always trying to do, to let people know how great Kildare is and invite more people into the county, which has an economic benefit to us all. So we are actually going over to London to do a Pause for Peace and tie up with the embassy there. So there's a lot going on around the world, and it's getting Kildare out there even more. So I'm very proud to do that, and I hope all the people of County Kildare will be the same. So just keep spreading the word.
All right, Áine, it's good to talk to you, and I think it's a great idea and a great initiative, and we're looking forward to a great year of activities. See you.
And Glenn, just to let you know, we're just launching a self-guided audio tour as well, so people in Kildare will see signs up around Kildare, and they can do a 1.5k walk, so a self-guide with familiar voices on it, so they're very welcome to do that. But I can come on again and let you know more about that.
You certainly can, and we'll have you on regularly and others throughout the course of the year as well. That's Áine Mangan, CEO of Into Kildare, promoting tourism in the county. Thanks for that, Áine, and good morning to you. Now, staying on an historical note, Brian McCabe is a name that should be familiar to listeners, because in our series of last year there, where Take a Walk With Me in Your County, an oral tour of local areas by about 14 or 15 local historians, Brian featured on that. And good afternoon again, Brian.
Good afternoon, Sam.
I think on that occasion, was it Kill you did for us?
Well, it was Johnstown.
Johnstown, indeed. Not too far away from Regarsta. Now, in a previous issue, you had a very fine article. This is the historical journal, I think, that I certainly get copies of this from time to time. Anyway, you dealt with Dermot Burke, whom you described as the 7th Earl of Mayo. And then you moved on to Palmerston House in County Kildare during the Civil War. This, of course, is a time where we are commemorating, if that's the correct word, raising consciousness and indeed debate and discussion around the events of the Civil War. I know it's retrospective and all of that, but every nation has to confront its history at some stage. Tell me a little about the background to why Palmerston House, now a prominent golf resort and so forth, was burned in 1923.
Sure, Clem, yeah. As you say, one has to look at the background to these things to get the full picture. And I suppose the background to Palmerston particularly, there would be a number of factors. Number one, Dermot Burke, the 7th Earl of Mayo, would have been one of the leaders, if you like, of the opposition to home rule in Ireland, you know, going back for a few years before that. And a number of the meetings, you know, to plan to thwart Home Rule would have been held up in Palmerston House. So, you know, he mightn't have been the most popular individual. The other factors were, you know, by January 1923, the Civil War had become particularly nasty. You know, you had the introduction of a policy of military execution for
where over 70, I think, were executed by the Free State side, and indeed who introduced laws, if I'm correct in this case, retrospectively to legalise the executions that they had carried out, which when they were carried out would be regarded as illegal. Now, in regards to your friend, not your friend, it's only a conversational word, but in regards to this Dermot Burke, He was actually, as you said, a unionist, but he was appointed to the Senate of the Irish Free State by W.T. Cosgrave.
He was, indeed, yeah. In fact, he changed his position. He was one of those who sort of recognised quite early that, you know, they were fighting a losing cause and, you know, really they were going to have to live under a new regime with the Free State. And in fact, he later urged his fellow aristocrats and landowners, you know, this is going to be the new government, we're going to have to work with them. And in recognition for that, he was appointed to the Senate by the first Free State government. Now that, if you like, turned out to be a bit of a poison chalice, because as the Civil War intensified, an instruction was issued by Liam Lynch, the commander of the anti-treaty forces, to
yes.
target the houses of senators and other prominent Free State politicians.
And that was duly done right around the country. In one way, retrospectively, we can say, what a pity that so many fine buildings were rendered into ruin. But we must judge it in the circumstances and context of the time it was done.
Yes.
100 years ago today, this morning or tonight at 9:30, what happened?
Yeah, 100 years ago on the 29th of January, some armed anti-treaty people presented themselves up at Palmerstown House. And initially, you know, they gained access, they were armed. I think initially Mayor Dermot Burke, Lord Mayo, thought they were coming to shoot him. But they said, no, my lord, but we have orders to burn your house. So there were a couple of different accounts given. One was that, you know, it was targeted because he was a senator. Another said that it was in retaliation for seven executions which had taken place on the Curragh just a month before.
That was the Rathbride,
the Rathbride
executions, column. Yes, which James Durney has told us about on the programme on occasion, yes.
Yes, yeah. So these were sort of the reasons given at the time.
Those seven men, by the way, were Stephen White, Joseph Johnson, Patrick Mangan, Patrick Nolan, Brian Moore, James O'Connor and Patrick Bagnall. And you list those names in your article in the History and Archaeology Journal. So the house was burned to the ground.
It was, yeah. They gave him half an hour to take out whatever things he wanted. So he took out portraits and family clothing and pieces of furniture and so on.
Nearly incongruous, isn't it, Brian, that they addressed him as my lord and then invited him to remove selected items before we burn your whole house down. I'm not sure how it would have occurred.
And in fact, there's a great phrase that sticks in my mind. We have a first-hand account because Lord Mayo himself, about a year afterwards, appeared in Naas. The Free State government subsequently set up a procedure whereby anyone whose houses were burnt could apply for compensation.
Yes.
And Lord Mayo did that. So.
And he got a tidy amount by standards then?
He did. He got about £50,000 to rebuild the house.
That would be, in today's values, probably around a couple of million, wouldn't it?
It probably would. Yeah, it was. Fairly good. But the phrase that comes to mind when he was giving his evidence, you know, to the valuer or the court proceedings, he said at one stage, "It is only fair to say that the incendiaries, as he called them, were excessively polite."
As we said, yes. Hello, my lord. We're here to burn your house, but if you'd like to select items, we'll sit outside while you do that. And then he moved to London, where he died, as you point out in the article, on the 31st of December 1927, just 4 years later, at the age of 77, leaving an estate of €70,000. And in his will, he bequeathed, as Brian McCabe writes, to his trustees, the plate, the furniture, china, glass, ornaments, prints, pictures, busts, statues, bronzes, marbles, vases, jewellery, medals, antiques, books and manuscripts in or belonging to the mansion house at Palmerstown, on trust to allow the articles to devolve as heirlooms. All very, very picturesque verbiage, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. That was the wording of the time. You know, I think it's significant because sometimes, you know, you hear stories and so on that everything was destroyed, but in fact it wasn't, you know. Certainly in the case of Palmerstown, you know, they were allowed to take a lot of stuff away. You know, as I say, the other factor that seems to have been involved too is, again, in his evidence, he sort of says something like, I know perfectly well who was responsible, you know.
Yeah. All very civil, but we won't tell anyone the names or whatever else in relation to that. Yeah. It's a fantastic article, Brian, and such great work that's done by you and the many, many people throughout Kildare who work so hard to preserve our local history and heritage. And indeed, the series in which Brian McCabe took part, Take a Walk Around Your Local Town, the audio series, that is still available. 14/15 History Talks, by our friends going from street to street, all those local historians who contributed, including Brian McCabe, is still available on our website, kfmradio.com. Brian, great talking to you again.
Before we go, Clem, can I just say a quick word to mention that we're actually I'm working on a book on the history of Johnstown at the moment. And could I appeal to anyone who might be listening who ever lived in Johnstown or might have old photos of Johnstown, to get in contact with me. You can pass on my contact details.
We will indeed. And Brian, if at any time we can help you indeed in promoting local history and your research on the book, and this message goes out to all communities around the county, that's what we're here for, to feature the issues and topics of interest to people in County Kildare.